listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Cobos Q in Edo. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Blanker's galloping back to his position here. That's what that was called, what you were doing. You were galloping parallel at the bar, back to your seat here inside of Cobos Q.
I was gracefully...
We call that a gallop.
Slow jogging back here to make sure you were panicked.
I wasn't.
Okay, B-Mac was a little
B-Mac
worried
was. You weren't jogging. Jogging is a forward-facing activity. You were sideways.
I was not. Okay, it's fine.
It was good. I mean, it's very athletic. I think it's more impressive than a jog. I'm giving you kudos here.
Okay.
Giving you credit. Great spot here, Cobos Q. Swing on by if you're going to the Astros game before. Swing on by afterwards. Swing on by during. They have Apple TV. Game is on Apple TV today, which you're going to be able to find that tonight?
No. But I don't have to because we don't have to talk about it until Monday. I just need to know what happened.
You can watch the condensed game or you can watch it here inside of Cobos Q.
I'll do Apple TV pitch on MLB Network. You got that?
Quick pitch?
Yeah.
Is that the one that comes on like down the dial?
Yeah. No, it comes in late. No. It comes on late at night where they
the show. It's like a
No, quick pitches they take. You can see this. It's a schedule on the margin of which game's coming up next, and they just like you
Isn't
said.
Is that the one that Heidi Watney does?
No, there's other ones that my wife is very critical of.
Huh. I have a
late night. I'll have it on.
I don't have MLB Network.
She'll walk. See, that's what I was going to say. That was my retort for you.
I don't have MLB Network.
She'll walk in. She'll go, oh, so now we have to dress like a hooker to do baseball highlights, huh?
She's not fond of the MLB Network gals.
Some of the females there like to.
Dallas Keuchel married one of them.
He did. That not Heidi Watney.
I can't ever remember her name.
Yeah.
I can never remember her name. Patrick Creighton's going to join us at 2:15. He's on the call for the Space Cowboys yesterday. Saw Hunter Brown on the bump who dealt. He'll also be on the call tonight, 92.5. So we're going to talk to Patrick Creighton about Hunter Brown at 2:15. 713-780-ESPN. Do you know what today is? And I think this, these two things kind of work perfect together because UCLA and USC show that they're not loyal to California and the Pac-12. They're cashing in, going to the Big Ten. They're going to take in lots of money. It's also Bobby Bonilla Day. Bobby Bonilla Day where he gets $1.19 million every day until, what is it, like 2034?
35.
35?
Yep.
Quite amazing. What would you do if you got $1.2 million every July 1st?
I'm going to tell you something
How would you live the rest of the year if you got $1.2 million every July 1st?
We talk about how savvy general managers could be and how the best – really do a lot of forward thinking when they make decisions. The fact that Bobby Bonilla and his agent and whoever helped make that decision was savvy enough to say, while you're still athletically performing as a professional, we are going to sign a deal in which, well after the days where you can be performing like an amateur, let alone a professional, you will get over $1 million a year for about 20 years. That is genius.
I have a hot take on this, actually.
I mean, look.
I don't think it was smart. I think you should take the lump sum and invest it yourself and collect more interest.
And I've got a retort to that because in all my years working in professional sports, I can't tell you how many players that I have come across that the minute they get a big deal, it is their goal and aspiration to get to blow it as much as possible on cars and extra crap they don't need. And the minute those checks stop coming in, they still got all that stuff that's completely devalued, and then by the time they get rid of it all, they're basically bankrupt.
That's a really good counterpoint. It does take some fiscal responsibility to take the lump sum, invest it yourself. He could make some more money, but you're right. There's a lot of I guess it makes it bulletproof where he's going to get $1.2 million every July 1st for every
year.
Rest it's
in
crazy.
Peace. Rest in peace, Kevin Duckworth, who was our center on all the really good Blazers teams that went to the finals.
Where's this going?
He's passed away, but while Duck was playing, and he was the nicest guy on the planet, one, he couldn't say no to anybody that needed anything. But secondly, his house was a borderline animal, almost like a zoo.
Really?
With all the exotic animals and things.
He had Kevin Exotic?
He had an 11-car garage.
Man.
And there was a car in every single spot. And I kept looking at it going, the minute he stops playing, like, what's he going to do?
Yeah.
And you worried about it because also he was so generous that he was always taking care of people.
He's taking advantage of, too.
And at a certain point, that money's going to run out.
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah, so you're right. I think that is a good rebuttal from it. Like, if somebody offered me that much money, though, lump fund, put it away, and collect tons of interest
if
on
you
it.
Had,
but you have to have fiscal responsibility.
No doubt. It takes the responsibility as well as the ability to, from a business perspective, see out what you need to do. And then you've got to stay true to it. I think that the fact that there's a lot of players today that look at Bobby Bonilla going, I wish I'd have done that too.
Yeah.
Because then I don't have to lift a finger, and it's almost like an investment. And every year, on a certain date, I get a check for over $1 million.
It's not a bad problem to have.
It's fantastic.
It's not a bad problem to have. UCLA, USC, they're also getting all the money. Pete Thamel went on with our guy, Feinbaum, friend of the Killer Bees.
Yep.
We have him on all the time that one time. He talked about USC and UCLA leaving to the Big Ten and what it can mean for college sports.
You know, a transformative day in the history of college athletics, similar to the day a year ago when Oklahoma and Texas left for the SEC. There are countless parallels between those two moves. And it ultimately comes down to something I've said on your show in the past and have written a lot on ESPN and really believe that we're not looking at a breakaway in college athletics, Paul. We're looking at a pull up. And these two leagues are now officially racing each other to be ahead in college athletics, and the other three so-called Power Five leagues are eons behind. The best properties, not named Notre Dame, have been taken off the board, essentially, by the Big Ten and the SEC within a calendar year. We are in a time of seismic and transformative change, and it's only going to continue. Leagues, other schools are going to be scurrying to join the other side. Today is the day the moat was cut, Paul, and the sides are as distinct as ever. The SEC and the Big Ten are ahead, and everyone else not named Notre Dame is behind.
He is the large assembly professor I dreaded, because I'm half asleep by the time, even if he's giving me something really meaningful. How do you stay awake for that guy?
You know who else is bad about that? Andrew Brandt.
Oh, yeah, for
like,
sure.
He's got
great information.
But his delivery is, oh, man, I wish you had a better delivery.
Oh, man.
I think he's right, though, in the sense that, like, I think we're looking more and more at a power two in college sports. The Big Ten
you're
and
right.
the SEC have separated themselves from the rest of college
athletics.
You know
what it is? It's the AFC and the NFC.
A lot of people were saying that. How
is that
ESPN's right? going to control one side, like the AFC, and Fox is going to control the other side, like the NFC. Now, I do think that there's still a place for the other conferences. Like, I think the Big 12's in a very good spot. Could they be the third or fourth best conference in all of college sports? Yeah. Or will they be up there with the SEC and the Big Ten? No, they
no,
won't
but
in terms
it,
of branded money.
It's worth being the third best when all the money's still coming in and you're still getting notoriety for being a conference.
They're going to get way more money than they – Houston especially. The Big 12 is going to take a little bit of a financial hit. Actually, I heard the contract's going to be about the same of what it was because everything else is starting to get the prices raised as well. Now, one thing that needs to happen for the Big 12, for if there's anything left of the Pac-12, even the ACC, like if the SEC came and got Clemson and Florida State, maybe even Miami tomorrow, the ACC is in a spot where the Pac-12 is in right now. And I think that could be the next shoe to drop, along with Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame at the end of
Notre
the day
Notre Dame's thinking about getting out again.
I think they're going to be in the Big Ten when it's all said and done. I think they're going to join the Big
Ten. At least geographically, that would make some sense.
And financially, it would too.
Yep.
Like, unless they're going to the SEC, like, right? Like, if both of these conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC, are collecting all of the big names, that's where Notre Dame's going to go. I think ultimately it's going to be in the Big Ten when it's all said and done. Now, I still think there's a place for the ACC. You still have Clemson. You still have Florida State. I think there's still a place for the Big 12. Even if the Pac-12 can survive this somehow, because reports are they're not going to take Oregon, not take Washington. So I think the Pac-12 can survive here as well.
Because they're trying to package themselves together. Oregon and Washington, I guess, were talking to each other about let's see if we can get a conference to pick us both up.
But I don't think the Big Ten's going to do it. So I think they can actually pick up the remnants of the Pac-12 and still survive in the college football space. Because let's be honest, football is the one driving this, not any of the other sports. Now, what those other conferences need, they need the expanded playoff. Because if you get to a 12-team playoff, you can still play with the big
Absolutely.
Boys. You might not be getting the TV contracts of the SEC, the Big Ten, but you're still going to get
but
enough.
But you check all the boxes.
Exactly.
You appease the networks trying to cover your games. You appease recruits that know that if I go there, I got a chance to get in and win. You know, you do all the different things from the standpoint of what the college needs, what the revenue streams need, what the networks need, and you check all the boxes.
I heard a lot of people say they don't like this. I actually like it. I think it's going to be very entertaining. Like, you're still going to tune in to watch the biggest college football games despite who's playing, what conference they're in. You're still going to watch it because you like it. It's entertaining to you. I've heard the student athlete side of this conversation as well. Let's be very honest. In this current state of NIL, and let's be very honest, it was going on even before it was legal, student athletes really aren't student athletes. Like, they're coming closer and closer to being professionals. So, like, the Big Ten and the SEC are taking advantage of the student athletes. No, they're not. They're about to get paid sometimes more than pros are getting paid. That Addison kid that left Pitt to go to USC is making more than, like, NFL third rounders. Like, they are pros. Like, let's just drop the student athlete label. They might need the baseline of credits and making the grades, but they can do that all online. These dudes are pros.
Your boy, Derek King, is a perfect example, too. He could have gone to the NFL to been on a practice squad and rehab and done all these things and would have made, you know, peanuts. But the fact that he was a Heisman Trophy candidate and the fact that at Miami's got an unbelievable NIL system set up, he was making hand over fist cash. Why wouldn't he stay?
Exactly. Like, you're making quite a bit of money, too. And Miami's an ACC school.
Yep.
How about that recruit the other day? The quarterback. I forget his name. Name's not important. He committed to Miami because they offered him tons of money. Like, they are pros. They're still a place for the ACC, the Big 12, and the Pac-12. One thing that I wouldn't hate to see, though, because if you're in the Big 12, right, like, you want to keep your space of this current college athletic space. You want to be a top three, top four conference, because you're not going to be the Big Ten. You're not going to be the SEC. Let's be very, very clear about it. But if you can help kill the Pac-12, why wouldn't you? Because, like, if you can add Arizona, Arizona State, let's just say Utah and Colorado, if you can add them tomorrow to help the demise of the Pac-12, which if they're demising, they're dying,
yep,
that helps your survival. Don't you consider that?
I think as much as, you know, the NCAA probably would cringe a little bit, it makes total sense because, like you said, if we're condensing and consolidating the amount of conferences, but at least, we know there's going to be supply and demand, right? Everybody needs college football, and they're going to demand the best conferences or the best matchups. If you can still get quality games and quality teams and universities involved, and you're the third best conference.
Yep.
And we also know there's three networks. And NBC, you know, they got the long-term deal with Notre Dame. But you got Fox, you got ABC connected with ESPN.
And you have more properties entering the environment, too. Apple TV, Hulu, all these people want properties as well.
And the fact that we know that networks on their secondary channels, mm-hmm, and platforms are going to conference channels.
You can never have enough content.
You're going to cash in hand over fist. You're probably going to make more money than you were already making. The conferences and the universities aren't going to be mad because at least they're associated with a conference that it matters. They're on the radar. And you keep it a thriving, surviving sport as opposed to, in a lot of ways, it was starting to die off because a lot of the smaller games and lesser Division I games were kind of in fade mode.
Yeah, see, I still think there's a place for it. And you also have people saying that eventually it's going to be like a 30-team Big Ten, a 30-team SEC. I don't rule that out. It's not going to happen in the next 5 years, but could it happen in the next 20? Yeah,
and
it could happen in the next 20.
And again, similar to what we see in professional sports, because you, like you said, with the NIL, we're closer to it than a lot of people want to admit to. You're going to get divisions. You're just going to get divisions where you break it down.
Yep.
You know, if you get 30 teams in a conference,
Big Ten NFL, SEC,
yes, exactly,
NFL.
But you've got, you know, six conferences in that 30 teams, and you split them up and you go.
713-780-ESPN. Your thoughts on what's happening in the college athletic world. 713-780-3776. Our guy, Patrick Creighton, he was on the call for the Sugarland Space Cowboys last night. He'll be doing it again tonight, 92.5. But he saw Hunter Brown pitch. We want to get his thoughts on Hunter Brown and maybe the pipeline as well for the Houston Astros. Maybe we'll ask him about Corey Lee as well. 713-780-ESPN. Patrick Creighton next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Cobos Q in Edo. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joining us now on the HRMP guest line is our colleague, Patrick Creighton. Love PC. He's broadcast the Sugarland Space Cowboy game. He was on the call yesterday with Hunter Brown on the bump. He'll be on the call again tonight on ESPN 92.5. Now, he won't be calling Corey Lee. We'll ask PC about him in just a second. Corey Lee has been called up by the Houston Astros. Jason Castro going on the IL. Not sure what. I don't remember him getting hurt at all. But Castro's headed to the IL. Corey Lee is headed up to the Houston Astros for the first time. We'll see if he gets a start over the next day or two. But Patrick Creighton, thanks so much for making some time hanging out with us. First and foremost, I wanted to ask you about Hunter Brown. He's lighting it up for the Space Cowboys. Did that again yesterday with you on the call. 6 shutout innings, striking out 7, 242 triple A ERA. What do you think the Astros have with the prospect Hunter Brown?
I think right now, watching the way he pitches, the type of stuff that he has, the command he has, I think he's a legitimate number two type pitcher right now. Like, he's got that kind of potential. He could be a legit number two. There is not anybody that I expect to be on the trade market this year that I would give up Hunter Brown's deal for. Absolutely nobody. That guy looks like he is going to be the real deal, and he is their number one pitching prospect in the organization. Wouldn't trade him for anybody right now.
All right, PC, with that being said, we've already heard that Click has contemplated finding a way to put him on the major league roster between now and the playoffs, and if that means putting him in the bullpen, so be it. I have been kind of adamant in saying, if you know this is what he does and he does best, and you know as well as I do, there's a big difference in terms of your prep and your arm and everything else going from one to the other. Why would you screw with him when you have all the starting pitching you have? Why would you screw with him and risk putting him in the bullpen this year in the major leagues?
I'm not a fan of the idea of taking a guy that you're grooming to be a starter, that you have high expectations for, and putting him in the bullpen. Well, we've seen them do this before. We've seen them do this with Christian Javier a lot. We saw them do it with Lance McCullers earlier in his career, especially when they got into the postseason in 2017. Lance McCullers and Charlie Morton were kind of the tandem team together. And if you're going to use him in that type of role, then, okay, it makes a little bit more sense. But it is, and Joel, you know this, you pitched, it is very different going from being a starter and having your routine and picking in ball every 5 days, your long tossing in between all your program, and being a reliever where you're expected to be able at any moment grab a baseball, warm up in 6 minutes, and be ready to go. Normally, like most starters, like that's absolutely the other end of the spectrum for what they do. It's a totally different mindset, and you guys remember John Smoltz when he had some elbow injuries. They moved him to the bullpen, and he was a top closer for a while, but he wanted to go back to being a starter. And one of the reasons he gave for being a starter was he said it was putting a lot of toll on his arm to have to warm up in a hurry, that it became increasingly more difficult for him to do so. It is very different. Not everybody can do it, and you don't really know what you're going to get. You'd certainly want to see him pitch in the bullpen before you brought him up and put him into any kind of high-leverage situation.
It's Patrick Creighton joining us on the HRNP guest line. And as you know, Brown has pitched out of the bullpen a little bit this year, but you mentioned it's always as a tandem. Like, he knows when he's coming into the game. He's coming into the game in the fifth. I think he backed into Jake Odorizzi's first rehab start with Sugarland. What's your hunch, though? Because listening to James Click talk about it, he said, you know, I think we could use somebody in the bullpen and it wouldn't hurt his long-term success as a starter, because they do view him as that. We saw David Price do that as a rookie. We saw Corbin Burns do it a few years ago as well. What's your gut feel with how they use Hunter Brown this season? Do you think he pitches with the Astros in 2022?
I do think he will be up with the Astros. Look, he's shown last year, this year, he's among the top pitchers in AAA. He's ready for a promotion. Fortunately, the Astros, even with their injuries, don't have a pressing need to call him up and start, because the depth that they've had at the starting pitching position, they haven't had to go more than seven deep. And so, you know, it usually takes between 8 to 10 starting pitchers to get through a season. So far, the Astros have been able to do it essentially, you know, only down McCullers and Odorizzi. So that the fact that those guys have continued to pitch and pitch well, and you've seen them absolutely dominate two of the best offenses in baseball in the Mets and the Yankees last week and a half, the starting pitching has been terrific for the Astros. And I do think if Hunter Brown comes up, that tandem style where he knows, okay, look, you're going to come in the fourth inning, the fifth inning, you're going to come in to start, so it's going to be a clean inning. That's how you're going to come in. He can still prep himself the way he would normally prep himself. Though, okay, I'm coming in the fourth or the fifth inning. Go through his whole routine. A lot of starting pitchers, they have like an hour-long routine on game day to get themselves going. So he'd be ready to go, and I think that might be the best way to use him, at least initially when he would have first come up. And I also think that because of the Astros' depth in the starting rotation, when we get to playoff time, some of those guys are going to wind up going to the pen, and that's going to, you know, move some of the weaker arms, you know, off the playoff roster. And I think outside of Verlander and outside of Fromber, we'll see a lot of guys wind up pitching that tandem style when we get into the postseason of the Astros.
Pat, when you knew that you were on center stage calling Brown's game last night, we had the guy that did Strasburg's games on, and he over-rehearsed everything. How many times did you use a line like, he smoked that one like Joe Pesci in Goodfellas?
I've always tried to make it a habit to never say stuff like that. Because when I would listen,
you're the counter opposite of the guy we had on.
I would hear that type of stuff, and I'd just like, you've got to be kidding me. I am not the cliche guy. That's not me. That drives me crazy.
Patrick Creighton of late hits, calling the Sugarland Space Cowboys as well last night, doing it again tonight, filling in for Gerald Sanchez. You can listen to it on ESPN 92.5. Corey Lee got the call-up. Jason Castro placed on the IL. You know, Lee's offensive numbers, not tremendous, hits for some pop. What have you seen from Corey Lee this season, the few times you've been able to take a look at him?
So, unfortunately, most of the times I've gotten to see Corey Lee, he's been PHing.
Yeah.
But the book on Corey Lee is he's got a terrific arm. He's got a really good arm. He's a power bat. He's up to 11 home runs right now. So he's one of the best power hitting catchers in AAA. The average still needs some work. The pitch recognition still needs some work, but he's a young guy. And he certainly is someone who has a lot of potential. They expect a lot from him. You figure as the pitch recognition improves, the average will inherently improve as well. But the power is very real. And, you know, that you have a catcher who can hit power to all fields. You know, he can put it out to center. I mean, he's got legit power. They've got a lot of high hopes, and he came into the season as the number one prospect in the organization. So, getting to see a look of him. I don't know how much he'll play. I mean, I would expect, you know, he's going to fill that backup role the same way Castro did, but, it'll be interesting to see him, get a couple starts, see if he can get something going, because the power is definitely legit.
So, Pat, you've seen them all now. We've heard Leon in the past. We've heard Lee. You just talked about Brown. We know the Astros have said they're probably going to at least they'll be kicking the tires looking around at the deadline. Are there any guys – you said Brown is a guy that you would not consider giving up for just about anything. What about the other guys? Are there any can't-miss prospects, as you just kind of broke down Lee? And like I said, we've looked at Leon and some of the other guys. Is there anybody you've seen that you said, well, they can't afford or they should not give up this guy no matter what?
Knowing what the Astros, you know, kind of recent trade history has been under James Click, they haven't really gone out and made the big splash. If they were to go out and make the big splash and, let's say, go for a Wilson Contreras or a package deal of Wilson Contreras and David Robertson, because they're going to want another power arm in the back of the pen, if that type of deal were to come in, Hunter Brown is the only guy that I'm saying is a definite no, but I also don't think you need to give up multiple higher-end picks. Like, for example, if that deal were to come about, I don't think you're talking about giving up, say, Corey Lee and Pedro Leon. I think you're giving up one or the other.
Yeah.
And then you're putting together a package of some lesser guys to go along with it. Both of those guys are free agents at the end of the year, so that doesn't mitigate their value. The only issue with Contreras is there might be a hot market for Contreras. He's maybe the best catcher in the game right now. The Mets are struggling in the catcher position. They just got James McCann back. He missed most of the season. The Yankees are struggling at the catcher position. They're certainly not going to sit on their laurels. So there could be a hot market for a guy like Wilson Contreras. But if the Astros are going to make a position move, that's the most logical, best upgrade one to make.
Pat, Lamont tweeting us and saying, Killer Bees, what have y'all done to Patrick Creighton? The dude sounds like he's been spayed. Is that even PC? What's going on, Pat?
Drained after what, last night?
I sound like what?
He says you sound like you've been spayed.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm having trouble understanding what you're
saying. That's all right. Pat, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to talk to us about what's going on out on the farm with Sugarland. Have a great call tonight. What's the schedule look like for late hits with the holiday week next week?
So, as far as I know, we're all off on Monday, so late hits should be back by Wednesday of next week. And I'll probably be on the call with the Space Cowboys tonight and through the weekend.
Outstanding.
Have a good call, Pat. Thanks so much for taking a few minutes.
Appreciate you, fellas. Thanks.
Patrick Creighton filling in for the on the mic, play-by-play voice, Sugar Land Space Cowboys with Hunter Brown pitching yesterday. Obviously some excitement on what he could bring to the table. Said he could be a number two in the big leagues at some point, maybe even, you know, some teams this year. Will we see him up? And then Corey Lee, not a name I expected to be called up on July 1st. Didn't expect Castro to go to the injured list.
What did he do? Hurt his feet running the bases after the home run?
Maybe Verlander wanted him to do a chore for him or something. So they put him on the IL so he could, like, fly. Maybe he's, like, moving his couch.
Hurts Verlander if that's his personal catcher.
It does. 713-780-ESPN. I want to give Dusty Baker some credit. I don't do that enough. Let's give Dusty Baker some credit next. It's Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Cobos Q and Edo. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Bregman drives one to left field, all the way back and off the wall. Two runs will score. Tucker to third, Bregman to second. Astros in front, 2-0 on the bases loaded double by Alex Bregman.
That was old Buzzkill, as Dre calls him, with the two RBI double yesterday. Almost a grand slam. Bases loaded there. That's all the Astros needed. Luis Garcia pitched well. The back end of the bullpen, a rested bullpen, pitched well for the Astros as they defeat the Yankees 2-1. They win 7 of the 9 games in the Gotham Gauntlet, more than I think any of us would have asked for. We had texters talking to us before this Gotham Gauntlet saying 5-4 would be freaking awesome. So a 5-4 is freaking awesome. What is 7-2?
It's freaking amazing. I mean, it's completely improbable. No matter, and again, that's not to take anything away from the Astros. It's to say more about what Major League Baseball for 162 games is. Sometimes you just get a guy that has his best stuff one night, or you're off a little bit. And we've seen it with the Astros, where there are games that sometimes, and I always talk about the games you count on your hand that you thought you had won that you somehow find a way to lose. You hope it doesn't bite you in the butt at the end of the year when it's checking the standings for positioning for the playoffs. Those are the kind of games I'm talking about. So because those things can have a difference in a win or a loss here or there in 162 games, the fact that you did what you did, and if anything, instead of going the ones, you know, the two that you're talking about that got away would have made you undefeated on and 9-0 against two best teams record-wise in baseball. It's incredible what they were able to do.
7-2 is nice. And then the fact that two of them, you had a lead late in the game as well, I think you can put that in the back of your mind is like the Astros can compete with the very best. I don't know why I'm in a good mood. Maybe it's because I'm here at Cobos Q munching on some delicious food. I had the wings. You had the quesadillas. Swing on by before the Astros game, after the Astros game, during the Astros game. They'll have it up on Apple TV, which not everybody gets. Maybe it's the fact that it's a three-day weekend
Friday,
ahead of the July 4th holiday. Cannot wait for that. But I feel like we should give Dusty Baker some love. Oh, it's Canada Day, too, from the resident Toronto Blue Jay fan. That's something we celebrate here ahead of July 4th, apparently. But
if there were Blue Jay fans in the building or in the city, we might care about that.
I have two Blue Jay friends, one right there, and then I have another friend who's a Blue Jay fan.
With wings?
Does he have wings?
I thought it was just like a bird you feed in the backyard in your bird feeder or something, another Blue Jay.
No.
No?
No, he's a real person.
Oh.
Likes hockey more than baseball, though.
Hockey. Up there, they like to call the organization that likes to watch hockey.
But anyways,
hockey.
I feel like we should give Dusty Baker some praise. He said this actually before the game yesterday. This wasn't even after the Alex Bregman 2-RBI double that was the game-winning RBI. He said this before the game yesterday when talking about Bregman and Yuli Gurriel.
I had faith in him the whole time. I got took 700 times. Water seems so low. Everybody wants me to change the lineup, take him out of here and out of there. And no, man, you got to show faith in these guys, especially guys with track record.
So this is where I think Dusty Baker sometimes we overlook, because we look at the batting order. And we're going to nitpick that. That's what we do. We look how he uses the bullpen. He's done a pretty good job of that this year. He even talked about like how, you know, people want him to move Yuli Gurriel in the lineup. Well, he actually did move Yuli Gurriel in the lineup. He demoted him and then promoted Kyle Tucker. But this is where I believe Dusty Baker is like where his praise as a manager should go. We talk about this a lot, that he's really good in the clubhouse, which you can make the case that's more important than the batting order or the, you know, managerial decisions during the game. But then the second part of that, like, he is a player's manager. So Alex Bregman, whenever he's struggling in the three spot, and yeah, he's moving to the cleanup spot now with Brantley gone, but he's still middle of the order, still a very important spot. He's not threatened about losing his spot in the batting order. He's not threatened about losing his job. He knows he's going to have a runway to struggle and try to turn it around. Same thing with Yuli Gurriel. Look, Yuli Gurriel's numbers all season long have been really bad, but he knows he has the runway to try to get going, try to get it better. And I think you have to give praise to a manager who's willing to give that leash to some veteran players who I think have earned the right for that.
And I think the question I would have is, what part of that surprises you in terms of the overall quote, knowing Dusty Baker and knowing what we've seen of Dusty since he's been in Houston?
Nothing.
He's going to border always on being hyper-loyal to his players.
Yeah.
He is going to play his gut feelings, and his trust issue, his who he trusts is different than who we trust. And he does not give a rat's ass what the media or the fans or anybody else thinks. He's going to do what he's going to do. I mean, he's going to Dusty.
He's going to Dusty.
And that's why we always say Dusty's going to Dusty. So, to me, as much as we started to question, you know, if and when Bregman's going to snap out of it, because, you know, now he's healthy and we're wondering, well, what's the holdup now? And as much as we were worried, is this the end of the line for Yuli? Like, he's just old to the point where he's fallen off the cliff.
Right.
I did not expect Dusty to say anything differently because, you know, as much as we're pulling for them, he's not only pulling for them, he's putting them in the lineup every day because he's not just, he believes that they will be back, and thankfully they have been.
See, I think you're on to something with, like, we don't expect him to say anything differently, but to me it's the action, right? We like, Yuli, he went from the five spot to the six spot. Big deal. He's still in the middle
right,
of the order.
Right.
Like, was that long overdue? Did he wait too long to do that? Yeah, he probably did. But Alex Bregman was not budged, right? He's in that right, three spot. He's going to be in that three spot. We're not going to change unless we have an injury to Brantley, and then actually he's going to be in the cleanup spot when Brantley gets hurt. So, like, it's one thing to say it, but then he also backs it up with his actions.
Yeah,
his actions backs up what he says.
You're right, because the other thing that I was going to add to that was the same way we I said what I said. The other thing is he also doesn't give a rat's ass if you think that, you know, when someone's sitting or resting a guy when he's on a hot streak. Like, we always talk about the fact that when's Dusty most likely to sit a guy?
Yeah.
After he's gotten three knocks in a game or you know, done something to where you're like, oh, my God. Well, that warrants you sit down. You know, or like you said, if you're going to have one of your better hitters in the top four in your lineup sit out, don't move everybody else up. If you're Dusty, you just take whoever you're putting in and put them right there where the opening is in the two spot or the three spot. As much as other managers would say that is absolutely ludicrous and unheard of. He's going to do it his way, your Frank Sinatra reference earlier again, and he does not care what you think, and thankfully for Astros fans and for all of us, the fact is it's worked out more times than not in the long term.
And to be quite frank, it's if you do replace Yuli at some point, I think the next 3 weeks are critical for Yuli Gurriel as a starting first baseman for the Houston Astros. It's not going to be Dusty Baker's choice. We saw this last year. Like James Click, Tampa Bay James, as our Twitch likes to call him, he wanted Chaz McCormick to get more at-bats in center field over Miles Straw. He wanted to see Jake Myers at the big league
Jake
level.
Jake Myers was the guy he had.
Jake Myers was the long-term guy. But I think even before Jake Myers was the long-term guy, I think he wanted to see more of a timeshare between Straw and Chaz in center field. So what did Tampa Bay James do is that he traded Miles Straw for Phil Maton, and to do that, Dusty Baker couldn't put Miles Straw in the lineup because Miles Straw is not on the team. So, like, if anybody's going to give up on Yuli Gurriel, it's not going to be Dusty Baker. It's going to be Tampa Bay James that
you're
trades
right,
for a first baseman and forces the hand of Dusty.
You're absolutely right, because you're right in every aspect of everything that you said, because we've seen it before. We've seen the way he thinks. We've seen the way James Click pushes back. They don't like it public. We don't know to what levels and degrees the confrontations ensue when they're trying to figure out who's right and who's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard that if the push comes to shove with James Click, well, then I'll just trade who you like.
Right.
And so we don't know to what level all of that is accurate, but we do know that there is, and again, all week we've been talking about the difference between the eye test and the analytics. Dusty's an eye test guy. Click's obviously an analytics guy.
Mm-hmm.
And when they can't meet in the middle, it's a power struggle.
Yep.
But thankfully, we haven't had that blow up yet in our face, and we don't need it to because the team's playing too well and it's too talented of a team. Because in a lot of situations, depending on the size of the market and the amount of pressure that's on them, it's going to blow up. I think Joe Girardi was a perfect example. Joe wasn't the kind of guy that the rest of the Phillies organization was trying to be. And Joe's old-school tactics and his eye-test baseball was getting really tired by Bryce Harper and some of their best players. You saw what happened. They got rid of him, and they went on a winning streak. So, thankfully, the Astros don't have to deal with it on a day-to-day basis. But when James Click meddles, he obviously wants to be heard. At a certain point, if he doesn't feel like he's getting what he wants, he's not afraid to do what he needs to do.
But I also think, to Dusty's credit, like, if you demoted Alex Bregman when everybody was saying to demote Alex Bregman to the 6-hole or to the 7-hole, I'm not sure you see the bounce back from Bregman. And where That's you are true. In the standings matters. Like, the fact that you have a 10-11 game lead in the American League West.
The psyche.
You have a luxury. The psyche.
Plays into it.
See, like, whenever they talked about moving George Springer out of the leadoff spot back in the 2017 World Series, the risk is you lose him. Like,
that's a good point.
You lose him. So, like, that is something that you have to consider. Like, if they move Bregman to the 6 or 7 spot, do you lose him? The fact that he stays at 3, you give him a chance.
Now, that you say that, and again, it factors into the Yuli thing where, you know, players take everything personal.
Sure.
You know that they are scuffling mentally at night, going over, what can I do differently? We joked about going back to pizza and beer. But don't think anything was off the table when trying to do it. But the one thing that probably helped them more than anything else is not worried about every day being afraid to go look at that lineup card to see if your name was still in it. Because if you're Yuli Gurriel playing for Dusty Baker, you know he's still going to have my name where it needs to be. And that means something to the players.
And if you're reeling, you're, like, worried about working on your game. You're trying to get your swing right, and you also have to worry about, oh, am I even in the lineup today? Am I demoted? Am I in the 7th spot? You don't have to worry about that with Dusty. I think
right.
that does go a long way. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. You want to weigh in with your thoughts? We'll keep this rolling. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Cobos Q and Edo. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brannan.
People were texting in saying that was not the real Patrick Creighton that we had him on. He was in the sunken place. We put him in the sunken place.
Well, I think that as much as, you know, it takes a lot out of you to do what we do for 3 hours, I think that doing a game like that, you'll be the first to tell people that. I mean, it's a different kind of a – especially if you haven't been doing it consistently. If you're doing a full game, and especially baseball where you have to fill a lot of time, I can see where his voice might have been a little tuckered out.
The things that – I mean, whenever I do a show and then the game, I'm worn out the next day. Like, it does wear you out mentally. It's something that definitely comes out. 713-780-ESPN. There's a big trade in the NBA. We'll get to that in just a second. But I want to thank Cobos Q for having us out. Fantastic food. Great to see the Loyals here out as
Donna,
well.
Miss Donna's here.
Big C right in
front. Total Everybody's Dallas total came Dallas in to show his appearance. Love for Houston.
He's not wearing a Rangers
Real
shirt, which
town.
Is good to see. He's not supporting Dallas in any way or form. Second place Rangers.
Ten and a half back. Congratulations.
Yeah. So
you get the participation.
Hey, maybe they can
trophy.
Get a wild card. The playoffs are expanded. Maybe they can be in the race. But I want to thank Raul for having us out. Tremendous
Raul's
place
family.
To come
he's
hang out.
He's a great dude. We love him, and he is loyal to us, and we are loyal to him because he's been an all-the-time long-timer for us first day, so we love him.
And if you're swinging by to the Astros game at any point this week, this is the spot to hang out before the game, after the game, or if you're looking for a place to watch the Astros Angels tonight, it's on Apple TV. Not everybody gets Apple TV. They'll have it right here. So a good place for that as well. Also in the fall, once football season gets started and you're heading over to TDECU Stadium for some Houston Cougar stuff, this is the spot to pregame as well. So Rudy Gobert has been traded to the Minnesota Timberwolves, and the return's quite interesting. The Wolves are sending to Utah Malik Beasley, Patrick Beverley, Walker Kessler, Jared Vanderbilt, a Houston kid, and multiple first-round picks for Rudy Gobert, who's going to be teamed up with the new Twin Towers there in Minnesota with Carl Anthony Towns.
Boy, poor Pat Beverly.
I know. I think he loved Minnesota.
Pat Bev is hoping to God this isn't it for trades with him before the season starts, because the last place you want to go is Salt Lake City. I don't understand it from the simple standpoint of, if you're putting – you already have Carl Anthony Towns, and you just locked him up on a Supermax deal or a max deal, why do you need Rudy Gobert?
See, whenever Big C told you about that trade, your reaction was like, they have Carl Anthony Towns. I actually like the pairing. Like, it is size. It is different than the modern-day NBA. But Gobert is the rim protector, and Carl Anthony Towns can space the floor. I mean, he's
a
somebody
three-point
who can
shooter.
Shoot.
He's proven he can shoot the three, which
surprised me. I don't hate it.
Here's what I think. I think if that's the way you're going to go, because you already have a stud wing, right?
Yeah.
In Edwards. So now what you need to do is figure out what you're going to do with D'Angelo Russell. You're going to have to either be committed to D'Angelo Russell, or you're going to have to try and turn that contract into someone that can do more for you at the point guard position.
Yeah.
And the dicey thing is D'Lo and Karl-Anthony Towns are boys, and they're very tight. So I don't know if Karl-Anthony Towns is your franchise. I'm not sure that you're not going to have to check with Kat and say, are you good if we're trying to shop him?
Can you bring him off the bench, or is he just making too much money?
I think he,
you're making too much investment
think,
there.
I also don't think from his – he's like Carmelo Anthony in a way. I don't think he's going to want to come off the bench,
yeah.
Especially if Pat Bev is gone. You could justify it with Pat Bev saying, I need offense in my second
unit. Give me that six man. You're going to play 30 minutes.
Yeah, I need a guy at the point guard that's going to distribute, play defense, and not going to want to take his shots like Pat Bev. Now with Pat Bev gone, I just believe like he's going to come in and say, it's even more, I'm a part of this. I need to be a starter and be major minutes guy. And I don't know if that's what the Timberwolves want. So I don't think they're done. I think that they now have a surplus of bigs that they have.
Well, you're not messing with Karl-Anthony and Rudy Gobert. You're set on that.
No, I'm saying D'Angelo Russell is going to be a guy that's probably going to be put out there.
Well, you talked about bigs.
But I was just going over their roster.
Yeah.
You have a surplus of bigs now, so you're not looking to improve your front court. You've got your small forward of the now and the future. Now you have to figure out your back court. And
yeah.
As part of that, you got to figure out either you want D'Lo or you don't.
It's kind of a Monte Steph Curry
and
situation.
What the hell is Utah doing?
I don't know.
I mean, I know that he and Spider Mitchell didn't get along, so I understand separating the two. But you would expect
you didn't really get anything.
Yes, I was gonna say you didn't get anything back to entice Spider Mitchell to want to stay there long term. And there had been rumors that teams were inquiring and making trade proposals. Evidently, Miami made a trade proposal to the Jazz trying to get Spider Mitchell. Maybe the Jazz are in full rebuild mode. They just haven't admitted it yet.
I think they are. Yeah. I think that they are. I mean, you didn't get back a significant piece here that's going to – I mean, I think the best thing for them is the multiple first-round picks. But now you're looking at Minnesota.
But that tells you had a team that's rebuilding.
Exactly. And also from, like, Minnesota, who has a better roster as well, those first-round picks, like, it's not the Houston Rockets' first-round pick. You know what I mean?
Here's the thing I don't understand. After this year's playoffs, aside from talking about who won it and the top teams, we were talking about the Memphis Grizzlies and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Teams on the rise. Teams that you have to reckon with for the next several years to come because they've showed they have youth coming together playing good basketball. Why did you want to blow that up if you're Minnesota? I get it with Utah because it's the same story every year. We get there and then we don't know what to do with ourselves and we can't win a series. But if you're the Timberwolves doing what you did, having as much young talent as you have, why are you tinkering that much with it? I don't think it makes a lot of sense.
Because it seems like you have a young nucleus that you can just let grow, right? But Gobert's not going to affect you offensively at all. Like, you can put him in some pick and rolls with Edwards. You can put him in the dunk spot. You're going to space the floor with Karl-Anthony Towns. We live in a modern day in the NBA. So I'm going to go, like, get off my lawn guy here for a second. Like, we went so far the other way with size, right? Where everything's kind of a small ball. You're using a stretch four. You're using P.J. Tucker at center. To me, size is like so underrated now that you have an opportunity to gain tremendous value with size. If you go the other way, like take the path less traveled, right? And I think that's what Minnesota's doing.
Well, I think the other thing is that you have something that not a lot of teams have. We saw how big of a problem it became when Boston was able to put 2 7-footers on the floor.
Yeah.
Because it is such a rarity, to your point, these days to have quality bigs. But then you also better have talented smalls that can pick up the scoring slack and also complement your
bigs.
And that's why I'm a little concerned with what Minnesota's doing, because aside from Edwards, what are you going to do with the shooting guard in the
offense? I think they're going to force D'Angelo.
I think you're either going to have to do that or you're going to have to find a home for him where you can get – because, look, the other thing that they had a surplus of wings.
Yep.
Because you had Vanderbilt, you had Edwards, there's a couple other guys on that roster that are kind of poor man's versions of the young, long-rangey, athletic wing player. So you kind of were using some of your surplus to get better, but now I still think you have more work to do.
You think the Rockets make a splash like this?
No, not this year.
I think Eric Gordon's going to be the only trade they really make. There might be some minor moves.
I think KJ Martin.
I'm sorry. I thought you said KJP.
No,
yeah,
no,
Kevin
no.
Martin I could see traded too.
Now, KJP could go between now and the trade deadline. This is a make-or-break year for him.
Agreed.
But I think that when you look at what the Rockets could do now, they've already gotten rid of the two guys that they were hell-bent on getting rid of from a locker room perspective. Now it's – they're going to find look, Daryl wants to get the band back. Daryl wants Eric Gordon. Phoenix regrets not trading for Eric Gordon, and Miami would like to get in on Eric Gordon. So there are teams that are good enough that want Eric Gordon. It's just, are you willing to take back what they're willing to offer? if it's a first-round pick, it's going to be a late first-round pick.
That's fine.
But I think Eric Gordon could find a home. And because K.J. Martin's dad is so hell-bent on getting him out of here, I think that they'll probably – they also have a surplus now of young guys that are want to be here that they want to play. I think they could find a home for K.J. Martin with a veteran team.
I don't think Eric Gordon's going to be, like, fast, though. Like, I could see Eric Gordon as one of the last few dominoes that fall in the NBA offseason.
I don't think they want him in training camp.
You're talking about anybody? Oh, you're saying the Rockets.
Yeah, the Rockets don't want Eric Gordon in training camp.
Before training camp, right. But not the first couple of days of the NBA offseason. Because right. There's so many other big shoes that right. have to drop. What happens with Aiden? What happens with Kevin Durant?
KD just threw a monkey wrench in the entire process.
Like Eric, and that's why I don't think he was a draft day trade either. Because like the Rockets weren't going to take anything like – they weren't going to take a 2022 draft pick. Anything that they wanted were future draft picks anyway, so table that for a second. Now you have the Kevin Durant free agency. You have Ayton. You have all these other moves that are happening. I think Gordon's going to be traded. I think he's going to be traded to one of the teams that you mentioned. It's just going to be one of the last few dominoes that fall before the start of training camp.
Until you saw the shift, then the Rockets had to focus on the possibilities of Banchero not being their guy at three. Eric Gordon was being talked about in trades. and he was a guy that was, again, those same similar teams I mentioned were calling, trying to see if they could get him. But I think the Rockets had to kind of refocus a little bit too because they didn't see that curveball coming where they ended up with the best young player in the draft because he fell into their lap, and so they had to adjust.
So the Houston Astros, 713-780 ESPN, the Wheelhouse coming up after us, 3-7, Monday through Friday. Of course, you can listen to BK and Jake. Cody Stutz is out. Usually during Crosstalk, we ask what's coming up next with your show. So since we're not doing the Crosstalk today, sell the Wheelhouse from 3-7 today. What's coming up on the Wheelhouse?
Well, I think BK will be dry-humored, witty. I think Jake will make sure he overemphasizes his numbers like 2022.
I've never noticed that.
The 2022 draft. I'm sure they'll have a couple of good guests.
You think Jake will be in a good mood today?
No, but I think he'll fake it. He'll talk about his second favorite baseball team. And I think they'll set you up perfectly for a big weekend.
Yeah. Astros.
I think they'll have, what is it, Astros at 4?
That's right, they will have that.
They'll have Astros at 4. They'll talk NFL, maybe a skosh.
They'll go around the NFL.
Maybe for a segment or two.
They'll go around the NFL. Yeah, right. You think they'll talk about Deshaun? Over under Deshaun references on the Wheelhouse today?
47.
Big C just said 15. Okay. You said 47. Yeah. Astros are taking on the Angels. Three-game series starts tonight. Apple TV, which Kobo's Q has it right here. If you're headed to the game, swing on by here before or after. They also play the Royals on Monday. So yep. Four games. How many games do the Astros win over the July 4th weekend before we talk to you on Tuesday?
I think they take 3 or 4 from the Angels.
And, 2 or 3.
Or 2 or 3 from the Angels, and they'll take the first game from the Royals. So we'll talk to you on overall. Tuesday with 3 out of 4.
All right, very good. Enjoy your 4th of July. Thanks to everybody here at Kobo's Q. Thanks to BMAC, our on-site engineer. Thanks to Sean Mapes doing all the hard work behind the glass. For Blank on Branham, we'll talk to you next Tuesday. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.